Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can always listen on 92.9 FM, 680 AM on your radio dials. But if you want to stay up to date with everything, anytime, anywhere, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. All you have to do is download the Odyssey app, subscribe to 92.9 FM ESPN. You can stream live anytime, anywhere. You can even go back and listen to previous segments with the rewind feature. So make sure you download that app as well to keep up with all the great content here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producer of the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday, is, of course, the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. He's also the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate Show, airing live Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time. Also, of course, the host of VSiN Primetime, airing weeknights on VSiN on Twitter at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
What is up, my friend? We are having better days, apparently, than Robert Saleh. So, guess we got that going for us, which is nice.
So, we will talk about that during the list, because I think there's a few interesting questions. Of course, the obvious assumption is going to go to this is an Aaron Rodgers operation. I think Aaron was scheduled to be on McAfee today, postponed until tomorrow. I don't really know if one way or the other it's going to matter. I know I saw Jay Glazer tweeted out that it wasn't an Aaron Rodgers operation, that Saleh was found out this morning. We'll get into all that because I do think that's interesting. Florio's already woke on it. He's already got the sniffer up in the air. So I'm excited about that because no one is better when Rodgers is up to when Rodgers is scheming. Nobody's better than Florio. So I look forward to reading Pro Football Talk for the next couple of days. Let's be honest, probably even beyond that. Wanted to start with some college football, of course, going through what we saw last weekend. We'll also get into our college football awards during the next segment. We'll get into the list. The Grizzlies returned to the floor. Ja Morant returned to the floor last night, also left the floor, then returned back to the floor, left again. Wanted to discuss a couple of takeaways from what I saw from the Grizzlies last night. Then excited to have the new Memphis Showboats head coach in studio. Ken Wisenhunt is going to join us at 3:30. Looking forward to talking to him. Talking some ball with Ken. We'll do that at 3:30. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. I think let's first just start with, you know, Tim, we don't like to do this very often, but, you know, when you're going to be in our business and you're going to take the amount of crap that we do, I think we nailed it when we said these are the weekends when college football really thrives, and I think last weekend was no exception.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, and I opened up, you know, we talked about it on Friday. I opened up my tailgate show with this basically a PSA saying, I get it. Week 7, which is this upcoming weekend, should be awesome, right? You've got Red River. You got Red River, easy for me to say. You've got Oregon, Ohio State. You've got LSU and Ole Miss. But these are the weekends where things get weird. And it was a very weird weekend. And, you know, a couple of those lines that seemed a little fishy came home at, where Missouri was catching points at Texas A&M, where Michigan was catching points at Washington. You had a massive letdown opportunity for Alabama at Vanderbilt. And then late night in Berkeley, things got weird and wild, and Miami somehow came back to win that game. But, you know, I was asked it today, did last weekend get watered down because of the playoff? And I'm like, no. I don't stop trying to make that a thing. To me, it just reemphasized the fact that I think the playoff is going to be phenomenal. And I think that first weekend, the third weekend of December, is going to be great. And there is a lot of parity. And this is good for the sport. I don't know how many teams legitimately can win the national championship. I still think it's small. I still think it's probably Texas, Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, maybe Oregon. Tennessee, you certainly have questions about after this past weekend, but I don't know. To me, weekends like last weekend reemphasize how awesome this sport is. And look, you know, dogs have been barking in the NFL. And
except last night.
Yeah. Because the reason was because they closed under six. You know?
Yeah. They have to be a touchdown or more.
You have to be six or more, and you're 16-2-1 against the spread, 11-8 straight up. But when the San Francisco 49ers lost to the Arizona Cardinals, goalposts weren't ripped down, walked through a city, and thrown into a river. Like, that's why the sport of college football is so awesome, is what we saw on Saturday. Seeing a university that has been, and you live in the South, that has been a punching bag for, I don't know, forever in Vanderbilt, and they went out and beat Alabama?
Can confirm for 36 years. I mean, I guess that's not fair. They were more than respectable under James Franklin, and they had a decent period under Bobby Johnson for a little bit, but that's about it.
And now they knock off Alabama, and, you know, I asked you, because I got asked this morning on a show. Well, I said that the best win in college football still is Alabama over Georgia, and then quickly on Twitter I got, oh, is it technically Vanderbilt over Bama better? I'm like, yeah, I guess.
I thought you said for contenders.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought you stressed contenders.
I asked you for contenders, and I guess when I'm talking about that, maybe it didn't come across. Yes, Vanderbilt, kudos. You also lost to Georgia State. So, Alabama probably still owns the best win.
I think so, because I also don't think Michigan's done taking losses, right?
And Michigan's win over USC?
Well, I was mainly thinking for Texas over Michigan.
Oh, I think Bama over Georgia is better.
Yeah.
Even though Texas had to go on the road to Michigan, I mean, it's not better than Georgia, but the Notre Dame win over A&M looks a little better now.
It does, and I think that was actually my big takeaway, because I'm someone that has been exhausted by playoff talk ever since really 2014, because that to me is a clear line of demarcation in which college football conversation then just became playoff, 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 playoff. And that's never really been what the sport is about. What I do think last weekend showed me, and I'll be curious to know if Alabama can get this back on track. I think what we've seen is the portal, the transfer waiver, NIL, however you want to say it, the allowing of rosters to change year to year. What that has done is make teams that are, I don't know, what do you think? Like teams like 6 through 35, 6 through 40, they're kind of, you know, you basically are going to separate them based on who kind of performs better, but for the most part, they're pretty similar, and any of them can kind of get each other on a given day. And the reason why I bring that up with Alabama is I don't think Ohio State gets beat by Vanderbilt. I definitely don't think Texas gets beaten by Vanderbilt. And this is not to diminish Vanderbilt. I worry that Alabama's defense is going to be, and particularly the secondary, because I think they're still pretty good up front. They're not elite up front, but they're pretty good up front, and they're really good at linebacker. But I do wonder if what we always see in the playoff is when you have a flaw, it gets exposed. And so what I'm more curious about is, does a 12-team playoff make it easier for teams with flaws to maybe get hot, get healthy, you know, NFL style, you know, 2007 Giants style, get healthy at the right time and go on a run? Or does it really make it guarantee that the teams that are the best teams, that have the most complete rosters, they're just going to keep, they're going to be the team that ends up winning it at the end of the day, like we've always seen. Like, we've seen TCU get to the championship game. We saw Washington last year get to the championship game. But there's a difference between getting to the game and then actually winning it. I'm curious to see if someone other than, because right now in the SEC, the only team I trust right now is Texas. I trust Ohio State. I don't know if I trust. I don't know if I trust anyone else. I'm curious to know. I wonder if we're right back to where we started this summer when you and I started doing this on a more regular basis. Are we really just back to like, I mean, I guess Georgia was the question. At the time, it was Georgia or Ohio State of the field. Are we back to like Texas or Ohio State or the field?
So,
and I don't know the answer. This is what I'm saying. Like, this is what I'm curious about.
Yeah, and no, and I think it's a fair question, and I don't think the playoff expansion is going to lead to more champions. Like TCU made it to the
championship. As in newer champions?
As in what we, like, for instance, Michigan won the national title last year.
Yes.
They had been building, right? They had gone to the playoff. They had won the Big Ten three straight years. It was building there. It wasn't a fluke. I don't think you're going to get, like, I don't want there to be comparisons to college basketball to college football. Just the way your roster's constructed, you need the depth and all of that. That said, the reason I am so excited about the playoff is I do think that opening weekend, the quarterfinals, are going to lead. The more games we play, the better opportunity we get to watch exciting games. And what was kind of a bummer for a long time, up until last year, because both semifinals were really, really good, were that we had these blowouts. Because when you have, like, there was a stretch in the late 90s where the Super Bowl sucked.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Every year you'd watch the Super Bowl, like, this is terrible. Like, I think we had this conversation.
Yeah, you and I did. We talked about, like, because one of the first Super Bowls I ever really remember watching every play of is that one.
Niners.
Yes.
It was awful.
Steve Young's monkey off the back game.
So the more games we get on college campuses, the more opportunity we're going to have great games. And you're going to have the runner-up of the SEC have to make a deep run, the runner-up of the Big Ten. Like, the thing I said all summer long was, like, you know, Texas, Georgia, Bama, it was actually more Texas, Georgia, one of them is insured to play the first weekend.
Yeah.
And that's something I feel like people overlooked a little bit about this whole, you know, playoff thing here. So, yeah, it was an awesome, it was a really fun weekend. It was eye-opening. And I think this weekend, too, obviously, we are going to find out. I was going to interrupt you there on Ohio State. You said you trust Ohio State. You might be right. But why should we trust Ohio State so far? The win over Iowa is good. But this is the first time, and maybe the only time this year, I guess they play Penn State later, that Ohio State's really going to be tested. They have to go on the road, night game, Autzen Stadium. Like, show me what you got.
You know my theory about Autzen, though, right?
It's a little overrated.
Uh-huh. You think that's going to be any more hostile than going into Penn State at night or going into Michigan at night or, as we heard from Brett Bielema, going to Nebraska? And also, don't forget, there are Oregon folks that are worried that stadium's going to be a sea of red.
You think it's going to be a sea of red there?
I know there are Oregon people that are concerned about that.
Yeah. Notre Dame did a pretty good job last year keeping the red out, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Especially when because the problem that Notre Dame has is it's such a bucket list. It's not that they're a bad fan base. It's such a bucket list item for other fan bases. People are willing to spend an ungodly amount of money to just go and see it once.
And, you know, last year I thought,
and let's be real, it's a lot easier to get to South Bend than it is to get to Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, and Eugene and Oregon's more of a regional fan base, right? Notre Dame,
yes.
Everyone's traveling
100%.
There, home and, you know, road fans. But, yeah, not to make this a Notre Dame thing, but last year they did do a good job because they had seen, there was a real worry that, like Georgia, like Nebraska, like some of these massive fan bases, that they were going to take over the stadium, which they've done in the past. And I thought Notre Dame and the fan base actually did a really good job, and they were undefeated at the time, so that helped too. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, would I be shocked if Ohio State went in there and flexed their muscles? No. But they're only a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm glad for that. I think Oregon's going to have a much tougher time blocking. I think Oregon's going to have a much tougher time blocking Ohio State than Ohio State's going to have blocking Oregon.
Now, who do you trust more as a head coach? Dan Lanning or Ryan Ohio Tough Day?
Chip Kelly.
Fair, fair. That is an untalked about.
I don't have the Lanning gene.
Ohio State last 8 games as a favorite versus an AP top 5 team. They're 1-7 against the spread.
Yeah, and a lot of times they've been big favorites. I mean, the last time they played Oregon, I think that was like 2 touchdowns, wasn't it? I mean, to me, like, that's kind of an underrated part of this. It's like, who knows the Pac-12 better than Chip Kelly right now?
Yeah. No, I mean, having Chip Kelly, I think, is definitely a benefit. I don't know where we're going with this, but what I do know is that this past weekend just reemphasized why this sport is so amazing, in my opinion, because you get weekends like that. And once again, we were told by so many who don't like the sport that we cover and discuss ad nauseum that the playoff expansion was going to ruin the sport. I don't know about you. I'm pretty sure a lot of eyeballs were glued to what was happening in Nashville on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, no. I mean, it's going to be this year's going to be a ratings bonanza. All right. Before we get to perhaps a hurricane deciding the AAC, which we'll get into in just a bit. The other thing that I was thinking about last weekend, it's going to be a lot more difficult, I think, particularly for my Southern brethren, that they're just now kind of getting into the NFL. Like, the college football fans are just now kind of realizing, oh, yeah, I can watch football 2 days. You're going to start to see there are parts of the NFL that are like there are things that are true about the NFL that are now leaking into college football, and people are just going to have to get used to it. Number one, schedule, because that's going to be a huge part of this. Like, when we think about it in these terms, in the NFL, it doesn't matter if the Bengals play a fourth place schedule and the Ravens play a first place schedule. If the Ravens have, you know, let's say not the Ravens, because they're in the same division, the division winner would move on. But let's say the Bengals have the most wins, and the Bengals have one more win than the Texans, and they have a fourth place schedule, and the Texans had a first place schedule. The Bengals would still be the one seed. And in college football, you're going to have teams now that we're going to start doing exactly what you started with. What is the best win for a playoff team? And then you're going to have teams like Georgia that have played Alabama, Texas, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Clemson. And, you know, they could potentially be a 3-loss team. And it was why I always just thought it was crazy talk as soon as Notre Dame lost to you and I or whatever. Yeah,
Northern Illinois.
Northern Illinois.
NIU.
As soon as they lost to them, it was just insane to be like, they're done. It's like that was such a BCS or even, I mean, I guess you could say it was kind of a 4-team playoff era, but
they would probably be done.
But 11-1 Notre Dame, I think, still have a shot. But
11-1 Notre, are you talking about for the old school, old playoff?
The 4-team playoff, 11-1 Notre Dame still would have had a shot, because that would also meant they would have won, what, 10 straight games?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it wouldn't have eliminated it. It would have made it, it's the type of loss that you're going to have a tough time coming back from, but it wouldn't have eliminated it. I think the problem is everybody keeps thinking as soon as someone takes a bad loss, they're done. And it's like, guys, this is what you realize, like, in the NFL. It's like, a bad loss isn't going to sink you the way that you think it is. Now, where it could impact is if you have a bad loss and no great wins, then what happens?
No doubt. And that's why I think Missouri's kind of in a precarious spot after they lost this weekend. They still play Alabama, but, you know, we could certainly have a discussion where a 2-loss Missouri with losses to Texas A&M and Alabama, they could be sitting there saying, what's our best win at 10-2? For Notre Dame, now the question begs, what's, like, would Notre Dame be in a better spot now losing to A&M and beating Northern Illinois or beating A&M, which is what they did, and losing to Northern Illinois, who may end up being a middle-of-the-road MAC team, I would say it's the latter. Now Notre Dame could say, we went to Texas A&M. Like, that's what the committee, it's going to be curious to see how they weigh these things. How good is your good? What's your best win? Now, I do think for Notre Dame, who is right now minus 150 to make the playoff, which I think is a little rich, because this team does seem very susceptible to losses. I do think that because of the Northern Illinois loss, their margin for error is certainly smaller. I don't know if they can afford another loss. But college football playoff, man, it just plays out this way.
So I actually would argue, yes, I'm with you. I think they're better off beating A&M because this is the other thing where...
Oh, if they had a loss to A&M right now and they were 4-1, what would the discussion be? Yeah, but who have they beaten?
Correct.
Right? Because Louisville just lost to SMU. So it's like, well, they have no good wins. Well, they do have a good win, but they also have a terrible loss.
So this is the reason why, and this is where I do get a little bit conspiratorial. I don't even know if it's conspiratorial because it's more I'm just kind of like, I realize that this is a television product. The committee is going to justify whatever they want, however they want. And if it's going to end up being... Now, historically, what we have seen is good wins outweigh bad losses. There are other years where bad losses... Like, for instance, Ohio State losing to Purdue in the fashion that they lost to Purdue. What year was that? 2016?
Yeah, 16, 17, or 18.
Somewhere. I think it was
16.
I'd moved back to Memphis. So it was either 16 or 17. I think it was before 18. The Tyler, the Purdue game. Tyler from Purdue. That loss basically that sank them. But that was also a 14 playoff era. I still think that there's going to be pressure to, if Ty, I'm going to have to see it to believe it that Ty's not going to go to Notre Dame in some of these situations.
Sorry, my dog is snoring in the background. I don't know if you can hear it.
Hey, he sounds great. All right, so this is the other thing. So this is the other news.
He's going to town.
He's going to town, baby. All right, this is the other news of the day.
I think I'm Francesa over here.
Oh, that's true. Or who was the Houston writer that fell asleep on his radio hit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we got the news today that Memphis USF, which was scheduled for Friday night, has been moved to Saturday at 2:30. I also think it is important to note, when they announced the move, they also included, we are going to continue to monitor this situation, and they left room. You know, I'm sure they're in some corners of the internet, there's going to be someone upset. How could you? There's real people involved. It's like, yes, all of that is true. But they didn't do anything irrational. Like, they've said, all right, we're going to try to move it to Saturday, and we're going to keep monitoring the situation. If it becomes obvious that they can't play the game, which at this point seems probably likely, this is interesting for Memphis, because Memphis already sitting with one loss, there's probably not going to be a date to make the game up. What becomes fascinating to me is if we get into a situation where Army and Navy are both undefeated in league play, it doesn't really matter. But if we do start to get into a situation where there's several one-loss teams, Memphis is already going to be fighting uphill because they're going to have one less conference win.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, you mentioned this, and then, yeah, the Liberty App State situation,
yeah,
where Liberty's undefeated, and they won't get to play that game, even though App State may not be that good. But, yeah, I mean, hopefully they're able to get this one home in. You know, it's to bring it back to kind of unbalanced schedules, as you talked about,
yeah,
with Georgia. Look at Army. I mean, Army's schedule that was given to them by the AAC, no Memphis, no Tulane, Navy's always a non-con game after the season's over. They play UTSA at home. Like, I don't know how good Army is, but they're 5-0. They've covered all five games. They're destroying everyone. Oh, by the way, Trent Dilfer, that is a disaster.
More on that in a minute.
I mean, it would be a surprise if Army's not 9-0 going into the game against Notre Dame. They play on the road at North Texas November 9th. Army's more than likely going to be in the AAC championship game.
I think you're right. I mean, I've only seen them play twice.
They've played nobody.
Correct.
Like, nobody.
So, like, I guess when I look at Navy, here's the thing that I see about Navy.
Navy's at least beat Memphis.
Well, no, I'm not even trying to diminish Navy. But what I do know about Navy is, yes, that team looks great. But God forbid something happened to Blake Horvath, I think all of a sudden that team is not that good. Well, Army doesn't feel as quarterback dependent as Navy does to me, because Horvath is playing awesome.
And Navy, we've seen that before in the past, where when I was on the broadcast team in 16, Navy went to the AAC championship game, they hosted it, and their quarterback went down in the first quarter against Temple. And it just derailed everything. It derailed that game. It derailed the Army-Navy game the following week. Like, yeah, it is something to be said, because Navy, why they've stunk these past couple of years is because their quarterback play has not been consistent. And it seems like they have a guy right now. But, it's crazy, man. Like, Army and Navy, I think we talked about this last week a little bit, they really could put a massive wrinkle in this whole system. They both play Notre Dame. Like, what if one of them beats them?
I mean, then now you're in the situation where that team, we now have to just consider, it's like, are they now in the driver's seat for the playoff spot?
If Army goes 12-0, beating Notre Dame on a neutral field, and then beats Tulane in the AAC championship game, or Memphis, or whoever. I mean, that's a pretty darn good resume.
Well, I mean, at that point, you
that's
are
the best win.
Well, then you'd be
any
then you'd be having
the G5 has.
Well, then you'd be having the discussion. Now, granted, some of this depends on if I'm wrong about Oregon. Is a win over Notre Dame. And let's say,
how does Notre Dame finish?
I mean, that's gonna be. Let's say Notre Dame goes 9-3.
Okay, so they're top 25, but not top 15. Okay.
Right, and then we're now going to be debating: is a win over number 17? Let's say it's a 3-point win for the sake of argument.
Okay,
is a 3-point win over number 17 going to be hands down better than a 3-point loss to, at this point, let's say Oregon ends up winning the Big Ten, number one Oregon on the road? I mean, both, I guess, would be on the road.
And Boise probably would have multiple wins over UNLV.
Right.
Yeah, it's gonna be a hell of a conversation.
Well, and then this is the real fun one. Are we sure the Big 12 is going to get that last seed?
No, we are not. Dude, I love this. Bud Elliott tweeted out his projected playoff this week, and I think a lot of people were confused when they saw it, because he had Boise State getting the fourth seed. And I just reminded, just quick reminder, it's not the top four Power Four champions, it's the top four conference champs. And I talked about this a little bit this morning on my podcast, which was the Big 12 is doing what we expected the Big 12 to do. It's eating itself every week.
Unless BYU's good.
Or Iowa State's good.
Yeah.
Like, if Iowa State runs the table, we're not having this discussion. But if you start to see these teams get knocked off, if Iowa State loses on Saturday in Morgantown to West Virginia, by the way, only a 3-point favorite there. If the Big 12 starts to cannibalize itself and Boise State just runs through the Mountain West like Ashton Gentry runs through opposing defenses, and they're 12-1 with their lone loss being on the road at Oregon by 3, We're going to have a discussion about Boise State being higher ranked than the Big 12 champion and Boise State getting a bye.
100%. All right, we're going to get into our awards during the next segment. I want to remind you that the program is brought to you by our good friends at Birdie's, 493 South Main Street, Suite 101. They have three golf simulators as well as a full-service bar. Great TV selection. Makes for a great spot to watch the games while also playing one of 600 courses worldwide. And also, this month is Golftoberfest at Birdie's. That means if you book online, you can enjoy half off the standard golf rates all month. Also, if you're a golf instructor and you're in need of a facility to carry on your lessons throughout the fall, maybe the winter months, DM Birdies on Instagram at Birdies901 for info on how you can use Birdies as your instructional facility that can benefit both you and your students in those months that it's not exactly fun to get outside. Also, now's the time to book your holiday party or event at Birdies. Dates are already filling up, so make sure that you book early, because if you reserve during October, you will get the Golftoberfest rates. That means you get half off if you book your party. Doesn't even matter if it's included. If the party is going to be in the event of, the event will be in November or December, you'll still get the Golftoberfest rates. Golf at Birdies.com. Follow them on Instagram for the latest at Birdies901. Awards coming up next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Coming up at the top of the next hour, we'll get into the list. The Memphis Grizzlies returned to the floor in preseason action, as did Ja Morant. Discuss some thoughts from that. We also have another proposal for saving college football, this time with private equity money. We'll get into that. Also, Robert Saleh has been fired. We'll discuss all that during the list. Ken Wisenhunt also going to join us at 3:30. But it's time for that time of the week where we get into our college football awards. It does kind of stink for any other team that pulled off like an awesome upset. Is there any way the team of the week is not Vanderbilt?
No. It is Vanderbilt, and yeah, it is pretty impressive what they did. And here's the thing, too, about it. Like, you see these upsets happen, and I always reference this. Parker Fleming, his Twitter handle is at StatsoWar. A lot smarter than me. Half the things he puts out, I don't fully understand. But he basically puts out a chart that says, did my team get beat? How bad did my team get beat this week? And the team this week that looks like, based off of the advanced numbers, that had no business losing was USC. I don't think Vanderbilt beating Alabama, I'm not saying they would do it again, but it wasn't a fluke the way that game played out. Like, they just kept coming and coming. I mean, they held the ball for 42 minutes. It was really impressive the way that they... When Williams did that pirouette on the sideline, I think we were all like, all right, here it is. Here they come. I mean, even my wife, she's sitting inside, and, you know, I was outside watching the game, and I'm like, Alabama's losing. She just looks at me. She goes, they're going to win. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. And they didn't.
You know what I thought was interesting? Because I texted you, should we take Alabama live? The thing that I noticed is, normally, that's something I don't hesitate to do. I didn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, there was something about that game. It's like, they can't stop them. It was more than just a hangover. And yes, they get a pick six, and they had the fumble recovery that led to another touchdown. Those two things are very important in telling the story. But the bigger thing to me is, like, as the game went on, what, Vanderbilt only punted twice?
I mean, that's a big concern about Bama. And they were able to play out of their minds in the first half against Georgia. And you could argue took their foot off the gas pedal. And Georgia was playing fearless and going for it on fourth down and all of that. But the fact of the matter is, Bama's defense is not very good. Like, South Florida was beating this team heading into the fourth quarter. And not good, I mean, by Alabama standards, right?
Yeah.
So, I did bet Jalen Milroe today to win the Heisman Trophy, because I can't help myself betting Heisman Trophy futures. But is this team going to be able to beat Tennessee on the road in 2 weeks? Is this team going to be able to beat LSU on the road in November?
Perhaps, because
Their offense is really good, and DeBoer is as good of a play offense designer as there is out there. But
so this would be my argument. Against Tennessee, are we confident? I mean, that could be just a game where you just blindly bet the over. And, like, I know that's normally a sucker bet, and you and I don't really like betting overs. But to me, it's like the question of, are we sure Tennessee, if Alabama puts up a number, and if they can put up a number on Georgia, they can put up a number on Tennessee, are we certain that Tennessee's built to come back in that?
I don't. I think I came away from Saturday with a decent amount of concerns about Nico.
I think, because he did pull a Joe Milton, and that's always tough to see. Running out of bounds. You don't throw it to the end zone. That was a tough one. He missed a couple of throws, but he didn't. I think the thing was, he didn't make the catastrophic mistake. I think this is the more interesting question as we've discussed what era are we in? Is time of possession back?
Kind of feels that way.
Because think about it, some of the big upsets that we've seen. Vandy held the ball for what, 40 minutes?
42.
42 minutes. Arkansas held the ball for what? It had to have been close to 40. I think Arkansas was close to 40. When Ole Miss lost to Kentucky, it was same thing. I think it was like 40 to 20. I don't know what the final numbers were, but it felt like every time I flipped over, I was not locked in on Minnesota USC. But
Arkansas had the ball for 35-29.
It felt like Minnesota always had the ball against USC. Like, I just wonder if we went to this era where time of possession didn't matter. I'm now wondering if it's back to starting to matter. Not in terms of, like, tell me the final score, but it does feel like some of these explosive offenses, you limit their possessions and you shorten the game. Like, it seems that it's having a greater level of success than it has previously.
USC actually, believe it or not, had the ball slightly longer than
Minnesota. Time of possession. Well, it's because Minnesota probably couldn't convert their downs.
Well, they went for it on fourth down with under, 40 seconds to go at the goal line.
Yeah.
That's a tricky one this weekend. Ooh, buddy, hold on to your butts. You want to take UCLA +5.5 against Minnesota?
Both those teams, like, I've decided my new move is there are games where the line is screaming to me. I call it the North Carolina principle. Every fiber in my being said North Carolina was the right play last week, but I just finally said, I'm not going to lose another bet betting on North Carolina. And guess what? It would have been the wrong side.
Yeah, they did not cover. I'm probably going to end up on UCLA. Probably.
So gross.
I know.
How do they move the ball?
I mean, it's not like Minnesota's this juggernaut offensively. This is the same Minnesota team that lost to UNC to start the year.
Yeah, I just kind of think it's like, yeah, that is going to be a game where it's probably going to be a one-score game and you're getting 5.5.
No, I'll probably hate myself because UCLA is not very good, but they might be getting, we're going too far down the road. But that is definitely going to be one of the hold-your-nose specials of the week, UCLA +5.5.
All right, then we've got dumpster fire of the week, and I feel like we got a lot of great candidates, but we'd mentioned UAB earlier. UAB's got to be up there. So for those that don't also know, there's some backstory. John Sumrall, who's now at Tulane, was at Troy, and let's just say I think there were some, I don't know, recruiting battles or whatnot. There was some bad blood. And I think Tulane was 100% willing to maybe do it with your backup quarterback here and there, but they were going to run their offense.
71-20.
That's tough.
Dilfer's gone after this year, right?
I suspect. I do know that there's a buyout issue, and UAB's not exactly doing backstrokes in cash.
The other dumpster fire is Purdue.
Indeed.
They are god-awful. And from a betting standpoint, there have been a couple moments this year where the wise guys have bet Purdue like they knew the outcome. Whether it was against Notre Dame, that game went off around 7.5. They lost by 59. Oregon State went from like 6 down to 2.5. They lost by 17. And then they lost by 46 to a Wisconsin team that I didn't know was capable of scoring 52 points.
Yeah, that was one of those ones where when I saw the box score, I was like, I need eyes on this. How did that happen?
They got outgained 589 to 216.
Because that's the other thing. It's like, it's one
maybe,
thing.
Maybe Graham Harrell wasn't the problem.
It's like, it's one thing if you sit there and go, well, Purdue can't score, but they're still okay on defense. But it's like, even with Ryan Walters, they're not good on deep. They do nothing well. 8.1 yards per play for Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was that was beat down.
The other ones that I could throw out there, whoo boy, the Kansas Jayhawks. Like, that's the question.
They're
would you
losing
rather,
every
would you,
game
Would you
close.
Rather lose one score games, or would you rather lose like Purdue?
I think it was Tom Fornelli who made reference to this on the Cover 3 podcast. They're 1-4 and have a positive point differential.
Who they beat up on, like Lindenwood or Linderwood, something like that?
Yeah, Lindenwood week one. But they lose, they're finding ways to lose, man.
There was also another note. I think they're getting outscored 60-0. In the last,
like the last 2 minutes,
the last 2 minutes of the first half in the fourth quarter.
Whew. Yeah, that's tough.
One to watch also, Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I bet West Virginia this weekend. Mainly, I prefaced it on the podcast. I was like, I know that I'm buying. I feel like I'm a big believer in buying low, but Oklahoma State, man, there's something off there. There is definitely something off there.
Yeah, I completely agree, because it's not even like Gundy's always been able to kind of scheme it up, but it's, I don't know if it's offensive line play. They can't get Ollie Gordon going. I would imagine those two things are related, but there's something that's off there. Okay, moving on to Heisman winner of the week. So the obvious one for us would be Diego Pavia, but the truth is I need an award better than Heisman of the week, because it's not like the numbers were not like amazing. Oh my God. Like, look at this, but it was just like gamer of the week, like ball player of the week. I have no idea how you describe it. And then even though he threw maybe one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen.
Oh, Cam Ward.
Cam Ward's fourth quarter was insane.
That interception was so awful.
Truly maybe one of the worst interceptions of the year.
Yeah. For those who missed it, he ran to the right side of the field, threw across his body just this lollipop, and the Cal defender caught it and essentially just walked into the end zone. I'll give you a Heisman of the week.
All right.
Kevin Jennings, the quarterback of SMU. This dude's a baller, man. And I had Louisville, and I kind of think Jeff Brohm is getting a little long in the tooth. They had a 3rd-and-1 from like the 35 or so.
Yeah.
Ran it right up the gut, didn't get it. Went for it again, ran the same play, got stopped again. I'm like, I thought you were like the creative guy. And I know it's his brother being the play caller, but you know, we've had a couple situations in college football this year where it's pretty obvious that the wrong quarterback was playing.
Yep.
And that's definitely the case at SMU. SMU, by the way, are you ready for the 8-0 SMU, 8-0 Clemson, 8-0 Miami ACC discussion?
Well, then what if we get to, like, listen, I think they've got a loss coming, but I've been saying this, I think, for weeks now. BYU's got a win over SMU.
Yeah. BYU, man, right now is sitting there pretty.
Yeah.
Good spot.
All right. Most college football moment of the week. I mean, the easy answer here is just like all the scenes from Vanderbilt. The goalposts going down Broadway, the like a truly field storming that I didn't really know if Vanderbilt was capable of. Because I've always thought Vanderbilt falls into the category of anytime they storm the field or anytime they storm the court, it's always kind of sad because they just don't have that many people there. I thought the scene was awesome. And then when you had the goalposts, anytime the goalposts go around town, I'm always in on that. But a couple of underrated ones.
I could just think about a group of 12 girls at a bar in Broadway.
Yes, on a bachelorette party. Yeah.
Like, what's going on now?
Yeah. It's my night. Like, this is like, my weekend.
People walking.
They're ruining it for me.
People walking down the street with giant goalposts. Oh man, yeah, that was incredible. I mean, the scene there, and shouts to Vanderbilt, man. Shouts to their fans. You know, I know Nick Saban took jabs at them on game day, but they showed out, man. Good for them.
They most certainly did. Couple of underrated ones. These are more maybe in the categories of bad beats, but I'll use this one as a total college football moment. Temple.
Yeah, oh my God.
So Temple good. Not getting the fourth down and then fumbling it and having it run back. And for anyone who was on the under or the over or whatever, like that is just like the ultimate college football moment where a play you don't ever see, you see in college football, and it probably cost somebody their weekend.
That was one of the craziest finishes that I've ever seen. And I think the total closed 49.5. I know they used it on Van Pelt Center last night for a bad beat. So if you did lose your bet on that, that is catastrophic.
But yeah, that's tough.
The fact that they ran it back all the way was just, I mean, was absolutely unreal. I sent this to you. I saw the worst take that I've ever come across. I don't know who this guy was. It was on some network that was making the rounds on social media. My buddy who covers Boise State retweeted it. That's how I saw it. Some jabroni went on a network and said that Spencer Danielson, the head coach of Boise State, should be fired because he didn't play Ashton Jeanthe in the second half. And I believe his quote was, "Do you even want him to win the Heisman Trophy?" And I was like, I think he'd rather win the Mountain West and go to the college football playoff with a workhorse in Ashton Jeanthe, who had 186 yards at the half, and they led 49-17 on October 5th.
Like, yeah,
there are people who are out there that are just, they don't have brains.
Well, it's where I always just, though,
this is the best player that has probably ever stepped foot on Boise State's campus. He's going to be a first-round pick. He is their offense. They're up by 32 at halftime, and he opted to sit his superstar running back because they're nationally ranked and have an opportunity because of the new situation to make it to the college football playoff and maybe even get a bye. And this moron is out there saying that Spencer Danielson should be fired because he's not looking out for Ashton Jeanthe winning the Heisman Trophy. He still ran for 186 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Well, this is where I just sit back and wonder, it's like, is this serious or is this a bit?
I don't know. And maybe if it was a bit, then I've taken the bait and I apologize.
Right.
I really try not to take the bait, but it seemed like this dope was all in on Spencer Danielson is an idiot for not playing Ashton Jeanthe. And I'm like, it's their fifth game of the year.
Yeah, I just always, my default position on these is I just always more or less assume it's a bit for content. And it's like, it keeps me from getting angry.
Well, it's one of those things, too, where I got to believe that. And I not to take shots at Desmond Howard, but I'm about to. He goes, he said something on College Football Live today about, like, you probably haven't heard the name Ashton Jeanthe. I'm like, if you're a college football fan, you knew who Ashton Jeanthe was.
If you're watching College Football Live on a Tuesday at noon, yes, you have.
Yeah. He's the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. Whether or not he'll win the Heisman Trophy is another discussion. But I will say from a gambling standpoint, because I can't get enough of Ashton Jeanthe props because they're so outrageous. His over-under on rushing yards at FanDuel was 188.5.
Ooh.
He had 186 in the first half.
I'm woke on this. That guy took the over.
Probably.
We've all been there. Like when Gurley took the knee for the Rams to cover. Hey, we've.
I'm going to send you it. Hold on.
I got it. I saw him.
No, no, no. I'm going to send you a different thing here. This was my tweet at 6.
Did you take the under?
I took the under. Here. I did it more as a bit. So there was a shop in Vegas offering 192.5, and I tweeted it out. How quickly into the first quarter will I hate myself for this bet? And then I responded, well, he just scored a touchdown on 63 yards on the first touch of the game. I already hate myself.
All right, what we got right, what we got wrong. I'll say what we got right, or at least what I got right. I mean, those are the weeks that you know coming in. You can kind of sniff them out. It's like everyone's kind of looking forward to next week. Everyone's talking about how bad of a week it is. That was not the case. Also, a couple of quick ones. Jonathan Smith always knows the line. And I was telling Tim if he needed someone to come give a full breakdown of Jonathan Smith's covering against Oregon, sticking it to the Ducks one more time. An absolute masterclass. It's like 3rd and 17 or something along. It's like 3rd and 15 plus. They run a 6-yard out route. Receiver immediately gets out of bounds. They run the kickoff. Like, they don't even think about going for it. Like, you can just see the offense is coming off the field as soon as he gets out of bounds. Kick's good. They cover. They get inside the number. Iowa couldn't score on Ohio State. That was pretty obvious. And then what I got wrong, SMU's a good team, I think.
Yep. No, and
or maybe Louisville's not a good team, and I was wrong on Louisville.
I think it's a little bit of both. I would give more credit to SMU, and I think with Kevin Jennings coming in, they're a different team. What I got right, A&M, that was easy against Missouri. I was on Washington. That was nice. Georgia Tech covering against Duke. They made me work there for that one, but they got there on that one. What I got wrong, Stanford's bad.
Yeah, real bad.
They're really bad, and I should not have bet them, Virginia Tech, in a let.